God made the world and all its wonders for man to explore. And there are countless wonders just outside your front door. Now join natural world photographer and journalist Roger W. Downs as he shares the stories of the people, places, music, and cuisines he has discovered as we explore with RWD.
Hey, welcome on into episode 16. I'm Roger W. Downs, your host, and if this is your first time listening, thank you so much for taking a chance on this podcast. And if you're a longtime listener, I really do appreciate you continuing to support us. It means the world to me. But in this episode, we're going to step a little out of my comfort zone into the cosmos, but from the safety of the Pisgah National Forest, located in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Western North Carolina. How are we going to do that? Well, we're going to step over to PARI, which is the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute, and chat with Melanie Krausen, who's the education director there. It's this big, huge 200-acre-plus facility with all these telescopes and radio dishes that look out into the cosmos to study the stars and the galaxies. But let me tell you how I found PARI. Now, I'd always heard about it, being here in Western North Carolina, that it was out there somewhere in the forest, hidden away, because it was top secret at one point in time, and Melanie's going to share that story with us coming up. But I had never gotten out there. I'd seen a few photos online, but didn't get the chance or know how to contact them for that matter. Plus, I thought it was one of those situations where you had to know someone who knew someone who knew someone to get you in the gate, right? I figured it was all locked down and you couldn't get in there unless you were, I don't know, Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory. Well, about 2 weeks ago, Chris Bainbridge from B-Clip, which is a great production company here in Asheville, North Carolina, contracted with my company to go out and do some drone footage of PARI for Ingalls Markets and their On the Road series. And I jumped at the chance because I thought there's no other way I'm going to get in there. Well, that's not exactly the case, because once I arrived, I chatted with Melanie Krausen, the education director, and she informed me that not only can you schedule time to go out and stare into the night sky and be educated about the stars and the cosmos, but you can also sign your kids up for like a space camp research camp. And she is going to talk about that coming up next.
Don't go too far. Explore with RWD. We'll be right back.
It seemed bleak for the colonists to be able to establish their own country during the American Revolutionary War. The British were winning until the British made a fatal mistake and threatened the wrong people. And Western North Carolinian historian Bill Carson from the Orchard at Alta Pass shares that story during episode 2 of Explore with RWD. Listen directly after this podcast.
Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
Hey, thanks for continuing to listen with the Explore with RWD podcast. I appreciate you. And as I promised earlier, on the phone with us now, the education director, Melanie Krausen from PARI. That'd be the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
So let's get educated about the history of PARI, because it wasn't always the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, it was first began construction in the early 60s, was completed in 63 by NASA. It was their own secret tracking station where they were tracking foreign communications and their satellites, as well as our own satellites that were just being launched then and was later used to communicate with like the Apollo missions and Mercury, Gemini, all those kinds of things. So it was their own secret tracking station.
Wow. Well, that place is massive. How many acres is out there, Melanie?
Just over 200 acres. 203, I think it is.
So how did they keep that secret?
Well, it's pretty well hidden in the forest there. Not a whole lot of activity that goes on through there, aside from a couple of people who have their homes just tucked away in the forest. So not a whole lot that's really going on. They didn't exactly advertise it or flag it down, you know, like they do with Kennedy Space Center, which is a really big and known facility. So they didn't really do that. So they managed to keep it secret.
That's true. There's about 500,000 acres out there of forest. So how did it go from NASA's hands to PARI's hands?
Well, eventually, NASA moved their base of operations where they were doing all those same tracking activities to a different location. And they had no need for that site anymore, so they left the site. It was picked up in the mid to late 90s by our founder and president, Don Klein. He bought out the land, made a land trade agreement, as I understand it, and bought that land from the government to turn it into private property. And he was able to get some other supporters and friends and collaborators to join with him in founding the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute as a nonprofit organization where we can do education and outreach, research, education programs, summer camps. And so now that's where we are today.
Oh, well, it's a fascinating place. What it exactly is. Do scientists use the research facility for?
Well, we've got a lot of different researchers and interest from students who will frequent our facility, especially during the summer for things like summer internships or young students like high school students and middle school and other ages for summer camps. And they'll use our facilities, they'll use our instruments to do research on everything from variable stars to galaxies. They can use the radio telescopes that are there, they can use our optical telescopes. And so we end up getting a lot of interest from researchers and scientists who use our facilities to do all those things and everything in between.
Now, when you're talking about the radio telescopes, we're talking about those two huge, if you will, for lack of better terms, satellite dishes, because that's what everybody kind of relates that to. And they're massive. Yes. By the way, how much do those things weigh? Do you know?
Ooh, I'm not sure how much they weigh. I know it's a lot, but I'm not sure how much they weigh.
Okay.
They're each 26 meters across or about 85 feet across.
Wow. Well, then it weighs more than an elephant. So
yes, for sure.
So those are the listening devices, if you will, or the radio towers that people are then able to use to look out into the galaxy. And what specifically do they kind of, if you will, look for? I mean, are they looking for suns, galaxies, planets? What kind of research is conducted with those?
So the easiest things to research and that those telescopes are best at is looking at galaxies, something that's very distant, something with like a lot of hydrogen gas. That's some of the frequencies that they're attuned to see the best are hydrogen lines. Mm-hmm. So they're often looking for hydrogen gases, so it makes doing things like mapping galaxies pretty easy, or easiest to do with those, to map out like gas distributions. It could even be used to do research on, you could, I suppose, look at hydrogen gases that are just throughout space and the interstellar medium, kind of that space between stars. There's a lot that you can do with it, but oftentimes when it's looking at an object that's in space, it's usually best to use those for looking at galaxies. The big ones are also used rather frequently to track different satellites. There's been a couple satellites we've been able to see before or capture or track down with those. And so they're really good at tracking down some different satellites.
Now, are you talking about satellites as ones we've launched that have gone awry? Or why would you be tracking down satellites?
Perhaps not really tracking down, just kind of tracking them. We've found the like Rhythm and Blues satellites is out there. Let's see, a couple other like radio stations. We found some satellites. We're not really sure what they are, but they're satellites in whatever orbit that they're in. There's a couple of them. So we can track different satellites. There's lots of satellites that are listed on like any of NASA's resources or United Nations. You could find a variety of different satellites and spacecraft that are out there and get an idea of where their orbit is, what bands and frequencies they're transmitting in, and then go and see if you can't find it and track it and watch its orbit. So usually that's kind of a fun project for students to do, and to a good way to get familiar with the instruments and how they work and some of the difficulties and interesting parts about tracking satellites.
Well, while you guys are scanning for satellites, if you can somehow hook me up with like free dish network, I'm kidding, of course. But when it does come down to discovering different galaxies and stars and so forth, which big discoveries have happened at Perry, do you think?
Well, we've had a whole lot of interesting things that people have discovered. For instance, we've had like through some of our summer camps, we were able to help students map out the Bubble Nebula. They mapped out the expansion rate, the speeds, the velocities at which that nebula is expanding, how it's moving, and they were able to get their paper published. So that was definitely
Wow.
very helpful information. They were like high school students, and they were able to get a paper published. So we've done a lot of projects like that, because some of our smaller radio telescopes and the larger ones are very good at doing that. And there's plenty of objects in space that don't have some of those numbers and parameters listed for them. And yeah, so some of our students have done those projects and they've been able to get their research published. They've also looked at galaxies. They've looked at different radio jets around galaxies. They've taken some different measurements of the hydrogen gases between us and galaxies. We even did, I actually used the radio telescopes to do my thesis research. And I was studying a particular variable star called Tabby Star. And I used our 12-meter radio telescope to map some of the distribution of hydrogen gases and the intensities of that gas surrounding the star as part of my thesis research, looking at potential causes for that star's variance in its brightness. So there's all kinds of different projects we can use that for, and a lot of those that have added to the general body of scientific knowledge.
Wow. And I know some people will sit back and go, well, that sounds kind of boring. And I'm not making fun, but the reason I've always been fascinated by it is because every little research piece like that, even the variance of brightness in a star, which can then lead to another discovery, which then leads us to another discovery, which leads us to another discovery, is one more step into us getting off this planet.
Exactly. Every bit of information that we learn is something we didn't know before. And oftentimes that's how big breakthroughs nowadays are made. Since we are very far removed from the invention of the telescope and for the first time looking at the moon through a telescope, we're very far removed from that. And oftentimes now, a lot of scientific collaborations are big collaborations with lots of telescopes worldwide or across the nation. And sometimes they're looking for really small, different little bits of information, and those slowly build up and add to bigger and bigger pieces of information as opposed to giant sudden breakthroughs. Those often happen by accident. Sometimes those do happen by accident where we suddenly discovered something just because we happened to be looking in the right spot at the right time. Sometimes that's kind of how it happens. And honestly, yes, sometimes there are moments where, doing research, it can seem kind of tedious and kind of boring. It's not a lot of flash and bang all at the same time. Sometimes you're just pouring through lots of spreadsheets and numbers, and it takes some patience and some diligence. But as long as you're keeping that main goal in mind of what it is you're really doing, what it is you're working on, what you're working towards, it'll get you through all the small little things that are kind of tedious now and then, and it keeps that excitement up and alive.
I was going to say, have you ever been there and had someone come running out of maybe one of the research rooms and said, "My God, man!" or something like that, where they're so excited because they've just discovered something new?
Not really. We've had that happen once or twice. One of our instrumentation, our chief technology officer, instrumentation engineer, he had tracked down a satellite he didn't know was there at one point, kind of discovered by accident. Was like, wow, look at this. Here's a satellite right here. We've seen some pretty interesting pictures suddenly come across like our all sky cameras where there's a bird sitting on top of our camera. We're like, hey, look at this real quick, guys. There's a bird sitting on the camera, and kind of fun stuff that like happens that doesn't happen all the time. We had a great shot the other day of a rainbow that was just peeking out over the whole facility. We're like, quick, get out, look at the picture, look at what's on the camera, it looks so pretty. But definitely haven't gotten a signal from aliens, and my God, man, this is exciting. Like, haven't had that happen before.
Now that I've said that, you're going to go in there tomorrow and you're going to get this beep, 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 beep coming across.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll get something really, really cool, really off the charts tomorrow. Who knows?
And we'll call it the Melanie signal because you'll be the one
There
sitting
you
there.
go.
But have you ever had anybody come out there and research extraterrestrial life or look for signals from other planets like that?
Not that I know of. It's possible, but not that I can recall or that I'm aware of.
I don't know if I'd want to be the guy who got that message. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I mean, I'd be excited, but I'd also be like, what does this message mean exactly? You know.
Right? So that could be that would be really interesting. Probably very exciting and very scary all at the same time.
Yeah. We are officially not alone. So as you touched on before, Perry does offer a lot of educational courses for students. Yep. And by the way, congratulations to those high school students who had a scientific paper published. I mean, there's scientists who work for years to get a paper published, and that's after college and years of research. So to have high school kids to have a paper published, that is huge. I'm sure they're probably going to work at NASA or maybe SpaceX one day. But what programs does Perry offer to a student who wants to learn more about outer space?
Gotcha. We're pretty open to really just about anybody. For our summer camps, a lot of our summer camps involve things like algebra. So we try to base our summer camps around skill level, because we want, you know, kids who maybe not haven't been exposed to that before and just feel lost the whole camp. So we try to base on skill level, give parents and whoever's signing up their kids, you know, an idea of like what is going to happen in the camp, what kind of curriculum we'll cover, and that way they can best accurately like gauge whether it's a good fit for their kids. So we'll do a lot of that. Our age ranges, I mean, we've had very young kids come in with just like, you know, their families and tour the facility, and we're happy to do that. We're happy to have, you know, college students. We are happy to have anybody. We can adjust our tours or planetarium shows or nighttime telescope viewings around whatever age skill level is there and with us, including like, you know, how long we go of a show based on how, you know, wide somebody's attention span is. So yeah, we've had really little kids before. We've had, you know, I think our founder likes to call it K through gray. Everybody of every age come, and we're just happy to share our resources, our instruments, what we do, and get people excited and get people involved. But sometimes it's hard to know, you know, when you want to get involved, sometimes it's hard to know, well, how do I? So we like to try and be one of those resources to help people do that.
And we really should be interested in science and space, because that really is not the quote Star Trek, but the next frontier, right?
Exactly. Yes, it is.
So, and you watch Elon Musk making huge leaps and bounds, really. I mean, huge leaps and bounds, and getting us back out into space and off to Mars. And man, he's like my hero. He's the mad scientist of America, and I love him.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, but I think if you have a child who shows any sort of interest in science or especially space travel, then I think Perry is a great location for them. And I'm sure you've probably had kids who have come back year after year who said, man, I loved it last year, I'm going back this year, and probably looking at careers maybe with SpaceX or even NASA.
Absolutely. We've had that happen several times. Our software engineer was an intern with us for a while. If I remember correctly, he was also a student of one of the summer camps long before I was there. Mm-hmm. Went on to become an intern, and now he's our software engineer, and he's been there for like 6 years. We've got, let's see, one of them is Dr. Patricia Craig. She works on several of the different Mars Exploration Rovers teams.
Wow.
On the Curiosity Rover. She was a student at one of our summer camps, and it just really made an impact on her, helped her hone in an idea of what she wanted to do, how to do it, gave her a real feel for it, and now she's working for NASA. She's also one of the people, if I remember it right, she's somebody that we frequently call in for to be a guest speaker in some of our Mars-based camps or activities, events, things like that. And let's see, who else? Matt Shelby, he's one of our interns, and he's fantastic. And he's been there, like, I think this is his third year now as an intern. He's coming back, and he's a fantastic resource. We love having him around. He does great work, and we are able to share our instruments. He's got easy access to instruments to do several different research projects that he's interested in, and we're happy to accommodate for that.
It's just fascinating how you guys are reaching out into the cosmos. And I was reading just some of the signs that are in your parking lot when I was there. And I saw the one that said the Milky Way rotates once every 250 million years.
Yep.
And I thought, Hold on a second. 250 million years ago, there was an extinction event on the planet, which then led to the dinosaurs. So about the last time we were in this spot in the rotation, humans, I mean, that just blows my mind, Melanie, that it takes that long for the Milky Way to spin. And it's not that the Milky Way is spinning slowly. It's spinning very quickly. I'm not exactly sure how fast, but I know it's spinning quickly. But it really speaks to how massive it is.
It is. Exactly. It really does. It's about how big it is. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I get blown away every time I think about that, because it is almost impossible for me to really comprehend the size of just the Milky Way. And the Milky Way galaxy isn't one of the biggest ones that's out there.
That's true. That's true. The Andromeda galaxy, one of our neighboring galaxies at 1.5 million light years away, roughly. Mm-hmm. That one's a little bit bigger than us. That one's, I think, about 25 to 50,000 light years longer. So it's a little bit bigger than us, just a little bit.
It blows me away. And the fact of how far away they are. I mean, we think, like, hey, I'm going to take a vacation to Florida. And you're like, I was in the car all day.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. It's a long trip, you know. It's a long flight from, you know, just here to California. And we're like, wow, that was so long. But, I mean, we haven't even gone, you know, not even halfway around our own planet, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to think that you'd have to travel, I mean, millions of years, literally millions of years to get to the next galaxy. At the speeds that we have available to us now. Now, if they ever come up with warp speed, even then, I mean, I'm not sure how fast that would take us. I mean, I don't know all the science behind that, but I understand they're trying to work on it. That would be pretty fantastic.
It sure would. It would definitely cut our travel time down a lot, at least within our own solar system and within our own galaxy to the next couple of nearest star systems. That would be very exciting.
So if someone wanted to come out and bring their kids to Perry, or if they wanted to come out and, because I know it is also a dark park, if I remember, is that the correct term?
Yes, it's a dark sky park.
Dark sky park, which is great for photographers. And I love taking shots of the Milky Way with my camera. But to find that place where it's dark enough to do it is always challenging. And I've heard about Perry, but never been able to get out there. How do they get in touch with you to do that? If they wanted to come out, maybe set up a camera at night, or if they wanted to bring their kids out and enroll them in some of your summer classes.
Absolutely. Best way would be through email. My email is mcrowson, C-R-O-W-S-O-N, at perry.edu, P-A-R. Mm-hmm. So that'd probably be best if they can reach out by email. We can absolutely do night where people want to come and just like look through telescopes. We do that all the time. We just did some last night. We can definitely do, you know, overnight camps where people want to just stay overnight and do their own astrophotography. We've done that before. We can absolutely do that. Enrolling them in summer camp, we should have all the enrollment pages up very soon on our website, perry.edu. So those should all be up there or up very soon. And if they're not up there, then emailing will be the best way. We can send you out all the information, the dates, the times, and links if you can't find the link.
Awesome. And I'll put that in the notes of the podcast description so you can find all those links to be able to get out to Perry. And again, our guest today is Melanie Crowson, the Education Director for the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute, better known as Perry, found deep inside the Pisgah National Forest of Western North Carolina. Sounds very romantic and fascinating, which it is. And Perry also offers you the opportunity to physically come in contact with the moon. And we'll talk about that next.
No wonder off now. Explore with RWD will be right back after this.
Hey, it's RWD here again, and when I'm out exploring new areas, I always take my camera along with me because I'm also a nature and wildlife photographer. And you can see some of that imagery at explorewithrwd.com, but more importantly, I want you to experience it the best I can provide it to you. And that's why I usually grab video of waterfalls, forests, and any place that can help you just reconnect with nature through either your cell phone, your laptop, your tablet, or even your computer. You can find my YouTube channel at explorewithrwd.com.
That wasn't too bad now, was it? Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
Thank you for continuing to listen with the Explore with RWD podcast. It means the world to me. My name is Roger W. Downs. I'm your host. And our guest today on the phone is Melanie Krausen, the Educational Director at the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute, deep inside the Pisgah National Forest. Now, when people come out to Perry, not only are they going to get a great education about what's beyond our world, Melanie, but you also have a lot of really cool exhibits there. Can you share some of those with us?
We've got a couple of exhibits from some NASA exhibits. We've got like a Redstone rocket engine. We've got a whole bunch of different things from the Apollo era and the space shuttle era to show off and talk through. We've got a minerals and meteorite gallery with all different kinds of minerals and all different kinds of meteorites. We've got a moon rock that people are allowed to hold.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're always happy to share those things. We'll take them through the facility, show them how we operate the radio telescope, show them kind of the cool parts of the facility, talk to them about like what radio astronomy is, how that fits in with the rest of the light spectrum, what that really means. And so that's kind of a basic tour through the museum section of Perry. And we'd like to be very flexible around that too, based on whatever somebody's really interested in. We can change the topic and talk to them more and show them some cool things about like the moon or how we do exoplanet research or any variety of things. So we like to tailor it to the group and their age levels, their group size, all those things.
All right, now tell me, what is exoplanet research?
Exoplanet research. Exoplanets are planets around stars, not our sun. Planets around any other stars. So it's outside of the solar system and like just how we can find planets that are around other stars, how we can learn about them, what they're like, what they're made of. Give them some kind of information about that.
That in itself is amazing. But the one thing I've always wondered, Melanie, is how do you determine what the planet is? Is it a rock planet with oceans like the Earth, or is it a big gas giant like Jupiter? How do we go about determining that?
Well, that we use like spectroscopy, which is the study of light. Mm-hmm. And the most that we've been able to really determine about other planets is, when I say us, I mean astronomers as a whole, not necessarily specifically Perry, but right. Astronomers. The whole community there. So we can use really big telescopes or telescopes that have really fine resolution to detect if there's a planet orbiting around another star. And then based on its orbital parameters, once we can track down its orbit and determine its orbit, how long it takes, how wide out that planet is from its star, how big the planet is, we can get an idea on like its mass, how its period, how long it orbits the sun or its sun. And so that can sometimes give us an idea whether it's a really large gas giant planet like a Jupiter-sized planet or if it's something really small, more like an Earth type of planet, Earth-like planet. And then spectroscopy comes in to give us a glimpse of what some of the gases are in the atmosphere of that planet as we look through the light that filters through the atmosphere of that planet, mm-hmm. The light from star filtering through the atmosphere, it'll give us kind of a spectral signature of some of the elements and compounds that are present there, which is a very difficult thing to do, especially if the planet's very small and you've got all that, you know, shining light from its star coming through, and you have to be able to subtract out some of the spectral signatures of what's in the star versus what's in the atmosphere of the planet. So it's definitely a difficult task to do, but it has been done before.
That's fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating.
It really is. It's very exciting.
How they do that. And it blows me away because it wasn't just but 100 years ago that we didn't know if there was other planets out from beyond our solar system.
That's correct.
And now we know that there's billions of them, not millions, billions. And by the way, if I remember correct, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I was watching on the Science Channel, because it's one of my favorite channels, that there's billions just in the Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah, that is our current estimate. We've only taken a couple of surveys of some very small patches of sky in our galaxy and found several thousand with a couple thousand other candidate ones. We need to keep watching those, keep studying those stars to confirm that we actually did see a planet moving around that star. But we've got several thousand just in one small like degree or a couple degrees of space of sky. And we've got large surveys taking more data in on more stars, but there's an estimated 200 billion stars in our galaxy. And so when we start to extrapolate that information, the numbers do climb way up into billions of planets that possibly be in our whole galaxy.
Did you just say 200 billion stars?
Yes, that is the current estimate of stars in the Milky Way. It's about 200 billion.
Wow. I'm just sitting here totally flabbergasted. I can't count past 10. I mean, that's amazing, because even if just like a fourth of those suns had planets, that's billions and billions of planets.
Exactly. The numbers are just way up there. They're just skyrocketing.
All right. So I have to ask you then, because some people believe there's life beyond Earth and some people don't. What's your take?
I'm not really sure. There seems to be that there's some evidence that would be very, and statistical numbers to support that there should be life on other planets in our galaxy. And then there's also some different takes on that suggest that it might not be. We're kind of sitting in a moment where we don't really have enough information to really determine and determinately say that there is or there isn't life. I personally wouldn't be too surprised if there were. Mm-hmm. At least from our own examples of Earth, where we've gone to some very extreme environments on Earth, like even the oceans of Antarctica surrounding Antarctica, we can still find some life forms that are living on deep sea hydrothermal vents. And we can find little, what are called extremophiles, little microbes and small organisms that can survive in some of the harshest, most extreme environments where humans can't survive on their own. But we can still find some form of life that does thrive in the harshest deserts and the coldest, darkest places, or in the winter of the North Pole, you know, and there's still some type of life that does survive. So just from taking from our own examples of what we see on our own planet, mm-hmm. it be too surprising. I wouldn't feel too surprised if we did find life that was an even greater version of an extremophile type of life form living under the ice and living in the oceans of like Jupiter's moon Europa, or in some of the cryovolcanoes of some of the moons out in the outer solar system. It wouldn't be too surprising. We've seen some surprising examples of life in extreme environments here. It's definitely plausible that happens elsewhere.
I certainly hope so, because if not, we are the biggest cosmic joke ever.
I kind of hope that there is. I think that would be a very exciting find.
If we found other life, even if it was just a virus, now hopefully we didn't bring it back, but a virus or bacteria would prove that that's life and that something could arise from that.
Exactly. That would definitely qualify as life somewhere else in the galaxy, and somewhere else in the solar system. That would be very exciting.
I certainly hope that that is the case. So what are your top three favorite facts about the cosmos, since you are the education director there at the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute?
Ooh, top three favorite facts. Let's see. Oh, they're all my favorite. So this is very difficult. Probably the size of Saturn's rings. They're about 175,000 miles across, and they're only about a kilometer thick. I do love that. That's just, Saturn is my favorite planet. Its rings have always fascinated me. They're gorgeous. They're just very exciting to see, and thinking about how thin they are and how wide they are is just mind-boggling.
How far across did you say they were?
About 175,000 miles.
175,000 miles. Well, the United States is only 3,000 miles wide.
Yep, it's pretty big.
Yeah, that's pretty big. Yeah,
it's pretty big. That's a favorite. Let's see. Another favorite would have to be. Let's see. NASA still doesn't use the number 13.
Really? Seriously?
After Apollo 13, they still don't use the number 13. STS like 113 or anything like that. None of the 13s. They still skip over it.
I guess after Apollo 13, I'd be like, let's not chance that again, guys.
Yep. That's a pretty exciting one. Let's see. The escape velocity of the sun comes to mind. It's 617.99 kilometers per second.
Now, what is that?
That is how fast you have to travel in order to escape the sun. If you were on like the sun's surface, how fast you would have to launch a rocket in order to get away from its gravitational pull holding you down. It's much less for on Earth and even less for on Mars. But that actually is a part of one of my email addresses. kind of by accident. I had the number 617 in there, and that I had found out about the escape velocity of the sun. I just thought that was really cool. So that's definitely one that sticks with me.
Well, hopefully you're not going to ever be on the surface of the sun.
I hope not, but I thought that was a really cool one.
I think the escape might just be your least, forward. Yeah, your least concern if you were on fire.
This is true.
I do appreciate your time, Melanie. Is there anything else that you would like to share with folks listening to this podcast about Perry? And by the way, when you look Perry up, it's P-A-R-I, or just use Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute. Both of them will come up online.
Yep. I definitely see that. Last little tidbit I'd probably like to share would just be to tell people that space is still very exciting. We've got a lot of stuff that's going on in just the scientific community to get humans further into space, looking at, you know, getting a base on the moon, and NASA's really pursuing that goal, which is very exciting. There's all kinds of exciting pursuits that you can get involved in space science, more so now than ever before, especially with all of the online and virtual programs that are going on. Mm-hmm. There's great ways to sort through data that telescope surveys have taken and be part of like a citizen science community. There's the American Association of Variable Star Observers. They have a bunch of opportunities for you to get involved and study variable stars. We even have some other online tools to help classify other stars. There's just a million different things out there, a million different ways to get involved, and every little bit is very helpful, and space is very exciting. So just stay involved in it, because there's lots of great things happening right now.
It certainly is a great time to be alive, and I'm sure it's only going to get better as more and more technology comes out and people like you make new discoveries, which take us to the next step, which makes the next discovery and the next discovery. And it fascinates me to no end. Let me ask you this before I let you go. If they came to you and said, hey, Melanie, we want you to come on up here and be on the first base on the moon, would you go?
I would not. I would not. I'm about an hour or so away from my family, and that's about as far as I can really take it, honestly. I'm kind of an extrovert, and I love my family and being able to be around them. Being several days away on the moon without necessarily very easy access to go back and be connected with all those people, that I think would do me in.
Well, I'm sure somebody will go up there and you can probably keep in contact with them. You'll be able to pull up the telescope or whatever the case may be and be like, they're right there. You see the base? It's right there.
There you go.
Well, again, Melanie, the Educational Director for the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute, thank you so much for your time. And please, if you get a chance, check out PARI.edu, right?
Correct.
Okay, please check them out online. Take your kids out. Get them fascinated with outer space, even if you're not that big of a fan. Trust me, in their lifetime, it's going to be a much bigger issue than it was even in the 1960s.
Absolutely.
So please, go get them, at least get them educated so they know what's going on when someone says, hey, we're blasting off into the cosmos. And they'll be like, what?
Absolutely. Thank you very, very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Explore with RWD. We'll be right back after this.
Natural world photographer Benjamin Wall.
When I was in Alaska at one stage taking photographs of the grizzly bears on the Alaskan Peninsula, there was a bear that came out of the weeds, these really high grass actually, just beside of me, and he was roaring and running. right at me.
Be inspired by this story and others from Benjamin Walls in Episode 7 of Explore with RWD.
Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
As you and I wrap up this podcast together, I just want to again thank Melanie Krausen, the educational director from the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute, better known as PERI, for her time today and sharing about PERI and also those really cool facts about the cosmos. Feel free to schedule your time to go visit. I've put all the links in the details to this podcast where you can find them, or even email Melanie directly to chit-chat or maybe ask questions if you've always thought, what makes up a star? Anything like that, I'm sure she'd probably be happy to answer for you and would invite you to come out to really see it firsthand. I guarantee it'll be an experience that you and your kids will never forget. I was so entranced with all of it while I was there. And then if you're on vacation in Western North Carolina, you can go visit Asheville, Brevard, hike the trails of the Pisgah National Forest, wander out into the Smoky Mountains. There's so much to do here. Just get out and explore. Oh, and by the way, if you know of a person I should go talk with on this podcast or a place I should go explore, maybe do a video on YouTube, please hit me up. Send an email to Roger, R-O-G-E-R, at explorewithrwd.com. That's Roger at explorewithrwd.com. And finally, if no one else has told you this yet today, I love you, and I know the good Lord above loves you. He's promised you that. So make sure to count your blessings, because even in these trying times, we are surrounded by His grace and His blessings, and He is working every day to better your life. You just have to take some time and appreciate what you have. And I have discovered, instead of just begging for forgiveness, actually dedicate your life to Him. Talk about Him all the time. Spread the gospel in a positive, sincere way, and He will bless your life like you would never believe. I'm living testimony of that. So until next week, peace, love, and coon dogs, y'all.
Thank you for listening. Visit us online at explorewithrwd.com to discover more about Roger, his photography, podcast, and adventures. Or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at explorewithrwd. Remember, we didn't inherit the earth from our parents. We borrow it from our children. May God bless you and yours. Now get outside and go explore. Explore with RWD is produced by Downs Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.